What's going on, everyone, and welcome to another edition of the podcast. Hello, how are you today? My name is Mitch Corbett. I'm your host for this lovely episode. Today, we have a pretty big guest. He's actually one of my favorite photographers in the game right now, Mr. Ryan Lobo. Ryan is a photographer that I guess some people would say is world-renowned in the world of MMA and wrestling. He's covered UFC events, UFC, AEW, WWE. He's been there, done it all in terms of photography, in my opinion. And if you check out his website and his Twitter account and Instagram account, you will see what I'm talking about. He takes some phenomenal photographs, and the way that he captures the eyes, if you're not familiar with the old expression, the eyes are the window into the soul, the way that he's able to capture that essence from fighters and wrestlers and people of influence is very much an incredible sort of like image to capture, and I'm a big fan of his work. And so I don't want to waste any more of your time. Let's get to the conversation with photographer Ryan Lobo.
Thank you so much for doing this. I'm a huge fan of all your work, man. You do really phenomenal photos.
Appreciate it, man. Thank you.
How's the weather in Florida? It's snowing like crazy here in Canada.
It is absolutely perfect. It's actually a little too warm today, but we'll survive.
Oh, man. So let's get to it. I don't want to waste too much of your time here. I'm here with Ryan Lobo, a great photographer. You do a lot of work with MMA, wrestling. You have magazines, you have books, that sort of thing. But like, I'm a videographer, so we're kind of in the same field in terms of like, you know, we produce content for, you know, clients and stuff like that. How did you first get into start doing photography? And were you always doing film originally, or did you kind of switch over to that as the medium progressed?
So actually I started in video. My plan was to be a documentary film photographer. I was gonna just have a backpack and I was gonna just travel the world and make small, short documentary films and basically sleep on couches and that's it.
It doesn't sound like too bad of a life, to be honest.
No, I mean, that's why I wanted to do it. It sounded like so much fun. Like I'm a pretty simple guy. I don't really need a lot of stuff. I actually don't really like having stuff. Every time I've moved, it's usually been with like a box or a suitcase and that's it. I'm not a big fan of having things until I got married. And then I learned that all that changes. I started out with just like tiny little cameras, like little handheld cameras, and then made my way to a flip camera, and it was HD, which I thought was like the biggest thing in the world. And this was years and years ago, because I'm very old. People don't even know what a flip camera is. And then from there, I decided like I was gonna go one step up, and I got a Canon T2i, which is like the entry-level Rebel series. Yeah. It was probably $400, but for me, it was like, this was a giant leap forward. Like, this was insane to spend this much money on a camera. And, you know, while it is a photo camera, I had no desire to ever take photos with it. I was only going to make videos with it. I just wanted the 1080p, and I wanted to be able to use different lenses. So I started filming with that, and I was doing that for brands. And we started, I was working for a company called Jocko. And we had sponsored Rashad Evans, former UFC light heavyweight champion.
And current Eagle FC fighter.
Current fighter on Eagle FC, which I just shot. So it's crazy how the world comes full circle. And flew out to Florida, and I was doing some filming there, making like small videos for YouTube and things like that. And while I was sitting there, like during practices and stuff, while the guys were training, if I didn't have anything to film, I was like, you know what? I have this camera. Let me mess around and just take a couple photos. Like I had no desire to do it. And I had messed around with an old Yashica T4 film camera as well. Like I would take that in my bag and just take some old film photos, but never had any plans to do anything with those or anything like that. And so after that trip, I came back and I got an email and they said, you didn't happen to get photos of this guy training. And I was like, yeah, I did. They're like, oh, well, a website in Europe needs some photos. I was like, yeah, here, take them. Like, don't pay me for them. They're awful. I don't care. Like, I don't want to be a photographer. So take all the photos you want. Like, it's not going to be my gig. And they put them on their website. And I thought that was really cool. And then couple weeks later, I went to Boston to film with Kenny Florian, and same thing happened. I get back and they say, hey, you didn't happen to get any photos of Kenny, did you? I go, yeah, I did. Like, oh, well, the magazine needs some. I'm like, here, take them. Do whatever you want with them, because I'm not going to be a photographer, so I don't care. You don't even have to say I took them. I don't care. And they ended up in a magazine. And that was a crazy thing for me to like pick up Ultimate Grappling magazine back in the day and actually have my photos in it. But at the same time, it was never a plan, you know? It was just something I did on the side when I was bored so I could sort of be creative.
So let me ask this. Like, as from a video standpoint, I know how to shoot and kind of like frame a photograph, right? Was that the same for you? Like, you're like, oh, I know the basics of it. Cause I have a lot of photography friends. I worked on cruise ships with photographers, and the lack of knowledge that they had towards video was kind of like, they're very similar art forms, but they're very different at the same time. Did you find it hard to go between to both mediums?
Well, I think the fact of doing video as well as shooting on film, so I couldn't just take 1,000 shots. You know, I had, you know, 24 to 36 exposures in a roll. And I always wanted to, in a photo, be able to encapsulate and tell a full story just in one shot. Sort of like when you're framing for a video and you're trying to figure out exactly, you know, what you want the scene to describe or show. And I think that played a huge part in my photography work, because it sort of gave me like a leg up, you know, a little head start, because I was framing things as if they were a movie still, but taking them for photos, you know what I'm saying? And so that to me made a big difference, because I was, you know, trying to tell a whole story in one single frame. So I think definitely starting out with video and starting out in film, even though I didn't know what I was doing, definitely helped with my photography along the way.
So you keep on mentioning film, and I think some people probably don't realize that, you know, it still exists as a way of taking photos and film, to be honest, as well.
Yeah.
Why why film? I guess.
So I started with film, just on a little point and shoot, just because I thought it'd be fun to do. And I thought it would be kind of cool to like take a photo, put it back in my backpack, week or two later, take another photo and not know what I had. And so when I developed it, I'd have 24 or 36 surprises, basically, because I didn't know what was going to happen. And then obviously digital is king. And so, you know, when I made my transition to photography, I was shooting all digital and things like that. But, you know, you start to get, at least I did, I started to get a little
lazy,
kind of bored with taking photos. Like I started, like, it was just, it's not that it's easy, because I never think that it's easy. Well, I think anyone can do it. I don't necessarily think it's easy, but I just didn't have the same joy, you know, like, oh, great. I'll go out. I'll take one. I'll take 10 more. All right, finally we got it. Whereas now with film, like I have a large 4x5, you know, sheet film, like the ones where you put the hood on and you have to hit it with the little clicker and things like that.
Wow, really? That's so
cool. Yeah. And so that's a very long process. Like you have to sit there, and like even right now I have a light set up because I don't know if you can see. Yep, there is a TLR 6x6 camera. Yeah. So because I want to shoot some portraits of people that are coming over tomorrow. But it's a whole process. I can slow down, I take my time, I figure out exactly what I want to shoot. And then from there, the other joy is then developing it. And I develop it all here at home and mixing the chemicals. And even though it drives my wife crazy because I take over our guest bathroom, but you know, mixing the chemicals, and then still there's that fear when you open the canister, did I do it correctly? Are the pictures going to show up on the negatives? And it's so much fun. It's like my little moment of zen. Like when I have days where I plan, like, all right, cool, this is going to be my developing day. And it's just me and like maybe put on some music. And it's just a nice quiet piece. And it makes me enjoy photography again.
Can you describe to me that moment when the photo processing is done and that it's like, it's exactly what you wanted, or like it's better than you intended sort of thing?
Yeah. So, I mean, that it's funny because I was just talking to someone yesterday about developing with their 4x5, because the 4x5, you develop like two sheets and they're or four sheets, depends on the holder. And, you know, you think about how long this process took just to capture this image on the negative. And then you have to mix it, and you're just hoping, you know, that things worked out okay, we didn't screw it up, that there's no light leaks, that there's no scratches, because you can scratch it from when you take it out of the holder to when you put it into the other holder, from when you're going to develop it in the tank. And that feeling when you pull it out after the after it's developed, and you look and you're looking through the window and you can see it, and you get so excited because you know how much it took to get there. But on the flip side, when it doesn't work out, it's one of the most heartbreaking things in the world, because you're in your head, you're trying to figure out what you did wrong, and you can't figure out what you did wrong because you're like, I followed everything by the book. And I think that's why, in a weird way, I love to bake, and I love baking shows, because with cooking, you can taste it. All right, I'm gonna throw a little more salt. Let's go a little more pepper. Let's take this out. But with baking, it is, you put 150 grams of this, put 2 tablespoons of this, this and this, mix it, put it in the oven. And you see when someone gets it wrong, the heartbreak, because in their head, they're like, I did everything right. And that's exactly how I feel. And so like when I watch the Great British Bake Show and something goes wrong, like I feel it in my heart, both as someone who likes to bake and from trying to develop film.
What do you feel when you watch a show like Nailed It? Where Nicole Byers, right? Where it's all the amateurs trying to do it.
It's the same feeling, because you know in your heart that you did everything you were supposed to, or you thought you did, and then it doesn't come out the way you wanted, and it's just absolutely soul crushing. And so that's why I'm always marveled by the guy on Great British Bake Show, or master photographers who, like, he can look at your dough and be like, oh, you should have let that sit for another 25 seconds. Like, how does someone know that? No one should know that. And Paul, like, Hollywood knows it.
So like with the photography and the baking, that creates a lot of, you need a lot of patience for that, because you need to let it sit. You need to, like, I cook a lot too. I bake a lot. You need to let it sit. How do you kind of find that patience in a world where there isn't a whole lot of patience nowadays? Like, everything's straight to Instagram, media, sort of thing.
Well, one, it's very difficult still. Like, I just ordered a camera a couple days ago, and like I got the shipping, but it hasn't shipped yet. So it's saying like the label's been created, and I ordered another film camera. Don't tell my wife. And I'm dying. Like, I just want the camera, and I'm a person that needs something. Like, if I decide today that I want a pair of jeans, I will drive hours to the store that says they have them. I don't care. And then if I get to that store and they're like, oh, we don't have the jeans, but we'll have them tomorrow, we can ship them to your house, now I'm good. Now I don't want them. Yeah. I don't want them anymore. Like, if I can't have it. And so it kills me sometimes to like have to let my negatives dry and let them sit there when I really want to develop them. I really want to see what they look like. I really want to, you know, be able to share them. But at the same time, I've come to realize, like, it doesn't matter when I post the photo. Like, I think we all have this idea, this thought in our head, like, I just took this great photo, I gotta post it right away. But why? Like, no one knows you took it. No one knows it's there. Like, if you post it today, you post it in 3 months, it's still a great photo. And I think we always want that instant gratification. And it's very difficult to kind of get that out of our heads. But I've been working at it and trying to realize, like, my Instagram and my website, like, it's really now for myself. Like, I could easily post like the same 5 or 6 people and get a ton of likes, but at the end of the day, a ton of likes doesn't get me anywhere. Who cares? Like, immediately someone's onto the next photo already anyway. So I've learned to be more patient in everything. This is a cool photo. Maybe I'll post it today. Maybe I'll wait for 6 months. Like, it doesn't really matter in the grand scheme of things. Like, I've learned to start doing things more for my own well-being and my own feeling of art, of when I want to put something out. Like, there's no rush anymore, you know?
Yeah, and I was wondering, like, with the advancement of technology, has the printing, like, not printing, but like the development of film, has it gotten better, or like, is it harder to find equipment for that resource?
Well, there's new techniques now. There's still old machines, like Noritsu and Frontier printers, scanners that will develop your negatives and everything for you. Now, like, I'm sitting right here to my right is a copy stand that I put a DSLR camera on and a light table. And so I use a macro lens and I take photos of the negatives, and then I put those into Lightroom and use a program to reverse it. So then I have a positive. So I actually have the image.
Oh, cool.
And so that's now,
very ingenious, actually.
So using like my camera now, I have a 50 megapixel, 35 millimeter image with, you know, crazy amounts of detail and sizing that I can print. And so there's definitely advancements, but I think that part of the charm of film is, you know, the scratches and the dust, like the little marks, the little things, like the fact that it's not perfect, mm-hmm. and the fact that it is grainy, and the fact that it's not just this beautiful, sharpened, smooth out image. Like I like the way it looks. I love there's like a character to it.
I can relate to that because, like, I mean, as like when you're watching a performance, like from a comedian or a wrestler, and like there's a certain rawness to it, that when there's that certain rawness, that it feels more real, and that's where people genuinely they're attracted to that sort of rawness. And I can really appreciate the fact that you want to have that little rawness. And like so when you were doing the video and then doing the photo, you were giving away the photographs for free, right? Mm-hmm. When did you transition to like, you know, this is something that I should pursue, this like people should be paying me for this thing? Like, as a video producer who does some freelance stuff, I always question myself with how much I should charge, or because I don't want to rip people off. Sort of, like, it's very, I don't know that where the balance is.
Sure. Yeah, you know, definitely in the beginning, I was doing just tons of stuff for free, mostly because one, I didn't want to be a photographer. And two, I was like, how arrogant of me to think that I should even charge someone for these photos that I don't know what I'm doing, you know? And I still have that fear every day. I have that fear every time I send out the proposal that they're going to write me back and say, this number is ludicrous, or these are awful. Or even when I send photos out, like, here's your edited photos, I'm waiting for them to write back, like, these are terrible. Like, do you have any clue what you're doing? So I've had that fear forever. But I started, as months and months and months went by, having people hit me up for magazines and things like that, mostly or all because of the access that I had to the fighters. It had nothing to do with any ability or talent that I thought I had. You start to realize, well, I should be compensated for what I do. If you are making money selling this magazine, it's only fair that my work, I get paid as well, you know? But at the same time, I still do things for free for friends of mine or for experiences, you know, that I want to have. And that's like, I'd rather be there taking photos and do it on my own dime. And also, I look at it that way, as if I go do it for free, they can't really tell me anything, you know? They can't really have any criticism because these are for free. So I still advise people all the time, just the young photographers that hit me up, because they are told by people like, always get paid, no matter what, always get paid. Turn down jobs if you're not getting paid. That you can do things for free as long as you're not being taken advantage of. If you are getting something out of it, or if you know that in the future you can use this to make money somewhere else, I'm all for it. Like, just don't allow anyone to take advantage of you. And I think that's the biggest thing. But yeah, every day is still a struggle. So that never goes away. So don't worry.
When a young photographer asks you and you say something like that, like, you know, it's always good to go for the experience. You might have a story that you can tell down the line and it might be beneficial towards your career. What is their instant reaction? Because it is always like, it does seem like it's always a very money hungry business, whether it be film, television, print media sort of thing.
Yeah, you know, a lot of times, you know, they'll hit me up and they'll say, yeah, I got the chance to do this or shoot this concert, and they only want to offer me $50, or they're asking me to do it, you know, and they'll tag me on Instagram. And that's ridiculous. Like, so-and-so said I should get X amount of dollars. And I'm like, well, you can ask for X amount of dollars and they'll probably say no. You can go shoot it for free if you want to, but that's on you to then make sure that you use the images of the bands that you're shooting to then help you make more money in the future, you know, to promote whether your website, your Instagram. And in that case, I think you win, because you have two options. Either you go shoot for free and you get to add these people to your portfolio to hopefully make more money in the future, or you sit at home on your couch, someone else shoots it, and then you're going to complain when you're not getting other gigs, you know? But you have to pick and choose. Like, that is not a blanket, like, do it for every job. Like, there are certain times where you absolutely need to be paid, and paid very well for what you're doing, because it is work at the end of the day. But you just have to pick your battles, and you have to realize, like, if I can use this to make more money in the future, then yeah, it's an opportunity that I need to take.
And along with those opportunities, like, there's also the opportunity to, like, make connections and meet people that could help you down later down the line, right?
100%. Most of my work still comes from word of mouth. And I always tell people, just be on time, shake people's hands, be cool. Because at the end of the day, usually if they're choosing between two photographers that they want to hire, they'll go, oh, remember that guy? That guy was super cool, super easy to work with and on time. Let's just call him. You know, even if my rate might be a little higher, or, you know, first impressions matter. They make a huge, huge impact on people. And I pride myself on being a professional, like showing up on time. I'm always early. I'm the idiot that's in the parking lot 20 minutes early, just sitting in my car.
15 minutes usually for me.
And that's how I will always be. And I always recommend that for everyone. But yeah, I just being easy to work with. You know, you're always going to have clients that are going to email you back and say, oh, can we get one more image? And, oh, you know, could you change this? And yeah, sometimes in contracts, you want to be like, actually, the contract says that's going to be an extra $75. Or you go, you know what, this one time I'll take care of you. You know, it's going to be a 5-second little thing I do in Photoshop to take care of you. And then it leads to more work. So yeah, you know, you could have stuck to this contract and done everything, you know, by the book that way. And then, you know, maybe they're not going to hire you again.
What you're describing is like such it's the right way in my opinion, but there's so many people that I find like, you know, they get lost in translation that it's not like, I wish more people would relate themselves to, you know, doing the experience as opposed to getting just the money, you know, like I feel like, cause yeah. I mean, I was looking through your bio and like, you've been to Amsterdam, Bruges, China, Iceland, Italy, Paris. Like there's a whole list of events. You've had your own magazine. You're doing Orange Crush, I think is another print you're in. And like, those are all very cool things to be a part of.
Right. That's the thing. Like, I just want to do cool stuff straight up. And like, Adam from Orange Crush hits me up and says, hey, you want to shoot this guy for the cover? And I go, cool. And then figure it out as we go along. Like, I know that I could have easily gone, cool, let me send you over a proposal. Let me send you over the contract. And it's got to be this and X amount of this and this and this. Or I could be like, you know what, Adam, handshake deal. I trust you. And at the end of the day, we're going to make some cool art. So I'm all for it, you know?
So like when you're doing like shoots for like Orange Mag, or you're doing like in the background, you mentioned it, you're going to be doing portraits earlier or later tomorrow. Like how different are those shoots, especially when you're covering like an MMA event? Like, I mean, are you shooting through the cage to get the photograph? Are you above the cage trying to get the photograph of the fights going on? Like how much work is into that experience of like getting that perfect photograph?
Yeah. So it just depends. Like for the last Eagle FC show that was here in Miami, Khabib's company, I was the official photographer. So I was above the cage, shooting down in. And then for a month and a half, 2 months ago, maybe, I don't remember. I have the worst memory, so I apologize. But then I went and shot UFC, and that was cage side, so shooting through the fence. And that was for T-Mobile Arena. So it really just depends on the client that, you know, you have different responsibilities. You know, for like T-Mobile Arena, obviously, I need to shoot the action. I need to get the photos out quickly so that they can have stuff for social media to be hyping up the event. I also need to photograph celebrities to show like who's there at the arena, to show that the arena is a popping place. I then also need to have wide shots to show how excited and how loud and how crazy the venue was for the fights, and things like that. And then any branding that I can find. So if a fighter's walking out and I see the T-Mobile Arena sign right there, you know, try to frame it so that way you can see the T-Mobile Arena there. Versus with Eagle was me shooting over the cage. I had a second photographer shooting backstage and also handling any celebrities and things like that. So that made my night way easier. It was just shooting fights. And then a couple months ago, I was shooting for Showtime Boxing, and that was strictly shoot these three boxing fights and that's it. And so it just depends on the client and what they're looking for. And just keeping them happy, you know? And then, you know, if you have a chance on the side, you know, you got a little downtime, you know, take some other cool shots that you can add to your portfolio for the experience. But yeah, at the end of the day, it's whatever the client wants and keeps them calling.
do you prefer doing it over the cage, or do you prefer doing it through the cage? Because I imagine with going through the cage, you can use your depth of field a little bit more to have that, you know, in focus, out of focus effect.
Well, so shooting over the cage is nice in the sense that there's no distractions. I never have to worry about the camera focusing on the fence and no posts or anything getting in my way. But the problem is you're shooting at a downward angle. So you're getting a lot of the floor and you're getting a lot of the crowd. And so that sort of takes away from the photo, and it doesn't it doesn't make the photo look epic. Whereas I've always, when I'm shooting in the gym, when I'm shooting sparring, I always like to be lower. And for any sport, really, I want to be lower to make the athletes seem larger, to make it feel larger than life, and to give them more of a presence. And so when you're shooting cage side, being able to shoot at an upward angle, and you're shooting into like the dark ceiling, and there's nothing, you know, there's no floor, there's no light canvas or anything like that distracting from the fight. And all you have is the two fighters in front of you with the darkness in the back. It really makes that image pop more. And so it's sort of like, I wish I could have both. I wish I could have the unobstructed view, but then be able to shoot low.
Hmm. Yeah, no, I feel the same way when I'm watching a wrestling show, because I don't know if you can tell, I'm a huge wrestling fan. Like having that upward trajectory, and you see the eyes of the opponents going on. I think that's a really unique look as well. Now, like with the fight background, like you've watched so many fights, and like they're so full of energy. How do you come down from an event like that, where like you're at a T-Mobile route and you're running around? Like, is there a way to calm down, or are you just juiced up for the next few days?
No, what always happens is right after the fight, you know, I'm in my head, I'm thinking like, perfect, you know, especially if it's like on the West Coast, I'm like, perfect, it ended early, I'll be able to get a good night's sleep. And that's never the case. I get back to the hotel, and 99 times out of 100, I'll go through all the photos because like the client will want the full set of images afterwards. Like there's a small set of social that I send out right away, and then a larger gallery, you know, of other photos that maybe didn't make the cut, or I just didn't catch at the time, so I was going so fast. And usually that I don't have to do that till the next day, but I'll be so hyped up that I'm just laying in bed, and even with earplugs on, there's still a little ringing from the crowd and all the music and everything like that. And you just can't fall asleep. Like no matter what you do, it's just not going to happen. And so then I'll just go through all the photos again. Like I'm usually up for another 3 hours after a fight, just because you're so amped up. And also my brain has been going nonstop. Like my brain is always thinking like, I need to get this shot, or he's walking through this door, or she's going to be over there. The light's hitting him right there. It'd be great with the logo right there. If I could get him spinning right here, buffer's doing this, so I know if the card's going to be that way with his face yelling. And yeah, it's a nonstop chaos up in here.
That sounds like a lot of fun, but also at the same time, not. It sounds like an incredible experience, but like, I'm sure you've done it so many times that point, now to the point, like, it's still awesome, but it's probably more work so than it is fun, I imagine.
Yeah, like, the thing is, it's always enjoyable. Like, it beats having a real job, but it's still a job, and there's still responsibilities that I have. Like, I would love to one day shoot a fight and just have no responsibilities, don't have to get the photos out quick. Like I don't need to capture the knockout. Like if I could just go to a UFC and like just shoot it the way I want to shoot it with no expectation, that'd be amazing. I think that would really change everything. But yeah, it's still a job. It's still running around trying to make sure everyone's happy, get all the assets that are necessary. Yeah, it's draining. Like I'm ravenous too. I have to bring so many snacks in my camera bag, and I'm eating cage side like in between fights while at the same time uploading and exporting images. So it's crazy.
So were you a fight fan before you got into doing specific just fights for photography, or?
Oh yeah, yeah. I remember renting UFC 1 when I was a kid, and I was at my buddy's house, and his parents either were cool with it or they weren't in town. I don't remember. So we could rent UFC and we could actually watch it. And so, yeah, I've always been a fan of fights. I've always, you know, my two loves are pro wrestling and fights. And I've loved those since I was a little kid. So I've been very lucky.
Has that fandom helped you be able to capture the correct images that you want to capture? Like knowing where the legwork is going, so around the cage?
Well, yeah, I think that, you know, because, you know, I started I did jiu-jitsu for a while and kickboxing and just being a part of so many sparring sessions and practice sessions for years. Like I was in every class. It's like I was sitting there and soaking up everything. And I start to figure out people's tendencies pretty quick. And I start to, like, in the middle of a fight, realize, like, oh, they really like doing this. And so, oh, there's that feint that's probably going to lead to this, which kind of allows me to capture a photo a little bit easier. And then with pro wrestling, you know, sort of see how a match is being laid out, or you figure out, like, oh, they put that chair there, so chances are, or that table there, they're going to use that later, so I should probably start to slide over this way because he's probably going to leap over this way. And then you're doing all these calculations in your head. If I'm on this side, well, there's like a row of lights that way, so it might get in the way. If I go to that side, it's going to be a little bit darker, but at the same time, the light's coming from this angle. And so you have to, like, pick your shot of what you want. And so, but I think it definitely plays a huge role. But on the flip side, I think that having non-sport photographers, someone who maybe never watched MMA or someone who's never watched pro wrestling take photos, is awesome and very something that should be welcomed, because they bring a different perspective. You know, if we have a bunch of people that are giant fans, like, we know what to shoot and what looks cool because we're thinking that's what looks cool, because that's what we've always known. Whereas someone else could come in and be like, oh, I'm gonna shoot it this way, I'm gonna use this lens, I'm gonna be down here. And we're all thinking, like, no, that's not where you stand, or that's not what you shoot. And the images could be crazy. So I love seeing non-fans, if you will, experience it and take photos, because I think we all can learn something. I don't care if you picked up a camera yesterday or if you've been doing it for 50 years, I'll listen to you just as much, because I can always learn from everyone.
Has that been an important aspect of your career, is the connecting with other photographers, with other artists from different mediums, whether it be, you know, because it's mixed martial arts, like they're fighters, but they're also fighters who might have an interest in baking or photography or, you know, some other art form. Like, does that help with your art form, and is interacting with other artists?
I think that interacting and meeting people from everywhere plays a huge role. I love to just go to the bookstore and flip through different magazines, whether it's a high fashion magazine, whether it's an art magazine. Like, you can always pick up something and learn something and basically steal from someone else that did it before you. Same as why I love to watch documentaries, and I love to watch anyone who is talented at their craft. I don't care if you are a canoe maker. If you are the best canoe maker in the world, I want to watch the documentary because I want to see your brain and how it works, and I want to hear what you have to say. And while it may be completely different from what I do, at the same time, the general idea could be the same, you know, that the thought process. And so it's always learning, being open, talking to everyone. Like I said, I don't care if you started yesterday. I want to hear what you have to say, because it might be something that I never thought of, or it's something that I forgot because it was years ago, and it might rekindle something. But if you went on my YouTube, all you'd see is different, like, photography videos and different, like, mini documentaries on people, because, like, there is art and knowledge in everything. Like, you can find something everywhere. And I think that's the biggest thing. If I ever thought that I knew everything, what's the point? Like, how much fun would tomorrow be if I knew everything? That would suck. Like, I love learning new things. I love going, no way, like, I could do that. Like, that to me is just the coolest thing in the world. And that's why I love baking, because I'm like, no way. Oh man, I can make a scone. Oh, that's sick. And then, oh, you add this. Oh, you do a quarter teaspoon of vanilla. That's incredible. Like, I love that stuff. Yeah. To me, there's nothing better.
Do you think that your traveling experiences has helped you formulate that concept of, like, interacting and finding new places and things to read from and grow from? Because in my opinion, like, I worked on cruise ships for 8 years, and the people I got to meet, the different cultures, religions, they have all formed me into what I am now. And it's an incredible experience being able to travel. And I feel like a downside of what kind of what we see now is that a lot of people don't get that opportunity to travel while they're young and grow from their roots.
Sure. Now, to me, travel is so important, and meeting people from all walks of life, and, you know, being able to, like, I always remember, we were in Istanbul, Turkey, and it was before a Glory kickboxing fight. And a friend of ours was like, oh, we're going to go meet a buddy of mine who has a rug store here in Istanbul. And we got there in the first thing in the morning. Store wasn't even open yet, didn't open for hours. He was there. He welcomed us like we were his family. We ate a breakfast, like there was seven of us. We ate at a table, probably the size of a pizza box, but we all crowded around each other and we're just using our hands and this meal that he prepared. And it was just the most beautiful thing. Like this man didn't know us. He knew our friend, but he didn't know any of us. And he welcomed us like family and took care of us. And it was such a special moment. And those are the things I cherish. And those are the things that I wish everyone could experience. You know, at the end of the day, you realize no matter where I went, whether it was in, you know, Australia or Europe, or South America or wherever, at the end of the day, we're all pretty much the same. We want to wake up. We want to have good food. We want to spend time with people we love. We want to take care of our families. And that's it. And I think when you start to break it all down, you realize like we're all pretty much the same. Like, yeah, we're raised in different areas and our skin colors might be a little different. What we believe might be a little different. But when we get down to the core of it, we're just human beings that want to be around people we love and take care of those people. And I always recommend everyone to travel as much as they can, however they can do it, whether it is on a cruise ship, whether it's on like a mission trip, whatever it is that you can do, because it opens your eyes to so many other things. And you really realize, like when I sit here in my house, I really realize how lucky I am. Like, because I remember, you know, sitting in China and just being like, wow, I am so fortunate for everything that I have and everything I have access to. You know, and it's not to say that it's better. They were just as happy with what they had. But, you know, learning to appreciate all the bonus things that I do have, you know?
Yeah. And it's incredible. Do you still talk to your friends, I imagine? Like it's like you can shoot them a message on a Friday, they'll get back to you on Wednesday, and it's like nothing's changed.
Oh, 100%. Like for me, I am very bad at keeping in touch with people all the time, simply because I just...
Well, you're always running around, man. I just
like to leave people alone. I just don't bother them. Like, that's my thing. I'm like, I'm always here. If you need something from me, you call me, but I'm good. I'm not going to bother anyone for anything. But 100%. Like, I have friends that we could not talk for 10 years. And if you call me tomorrow, it's like we never missed a beat and we are best friends. Like, that's just how it is. And that having that connection is it's a beautiful thing. Like I just, that's why I love taking photos of people. Like I just love people. I love capturing people. I love capturing their emotions. I love capturing, you know, their expressions, everything. Like to me, like landscape photography, it's not my thing. Sometimes I'll take photos of it and it's cool, but I always like to have a person in my photos when I can, because I just think it adds a different dimension.
And so like, when you're like doing photos with fighters, like do they understand your art form? Is there that level of respect because you have that background fighting as well? Because I mean, when you look at some of the fighters that are on the UFC or Eagle FC or prize fighting, bare knuckle now, I mean, there's so many fighters with so many different personalities from all around the world too. I mean, that's gotta be an incredible experience to be able to like interact with these people who, you know, they're doing the same thing but are vastly different.
Yeah, like it's hard to, when I meet someone new, like I have all these ideas in my head. And then to them, there's like, we're just taking a photo. Like, let's just get it over with. So oftentimes what makes a difference is either having a mutual friend that they'll be like, oh, you shot with so-and-so? Oh, cool. Then I trust you and we can do this. Or the other thing is like to be able, you know, I tether the camera so they can see the photo right away. So from on the laptop. And so oftentimes I'll be like, let's throw a punch. Let's do this. And you change your face like this. And they look at me like I'm an idiot. Like, what the hell are you talking about? I'll just stand there and do this. I go, if you do that, it looks boring. Trust me. Do this, hit this right here, this. And they'll do it. And then when they see it pop up on the screen, all of a sudden they're like, oh, that's what you, okay. And once that happens, then I have them and I can do whatever I want. Because to me, the trust is the most important thing. And once they've trust me, they realize like, I want to take the best photo of you possible. You're allowing me to take your photo. So in turn, my job is to give you the best that I can to my ability. And that trust either comes from them seeing their images or them knowing the people that I've worked for in the past trusted me. Like Ray Lewis, the football player, came into the gym years and years ago.
That's an intense presence.
So he's there, and you know, he's in my gym. So I start taking photos, whatever, and I could see the side eye start to happen, and starts to look at me, and kind of gives me that sort of like, man, like, don't be taking photos of me. And I just remember him asking the trainer, like, yo, who's this dude? And I was like, oh, that's Ryan. He's Rashad's photographer. And he was like, oh, cool, man. All right, never mind. Do whatever you want. Because he knew that if Rashad trusted me, then he could trust me, you know? And there's, to me, getting a gotcha photo or a viral photo of something bad does nothing for me at all. I might be famous for 5 seconds, if that, on the internet, but then my reputation's gone and no one would ever work with me again. And what did I win? I won 500 retweets one day, big whoop. And so it's more important for me to take a good quality image and something I'm proud of and that the subject is proud of as well. And at the end of the day, that's all I can ask for.
And like, I think that's an important part of what you're doing, because like, you're basically working on word of mouth through respect through the art form. And like, I see you on Twitter and like, I mean, let me just do the research part of it. FYC, a photo of people and events in the magazine are photos. Like, you, it doesn't seem like you really like promoting your own work. You kind of like let other people do that. Was that a decision you made a long time ago or something you recently gone into?
No, it's just that for me, like at the end of the day, I just take photos. Like, I am not on the front line. I am not documenting war. I am not documenting famine. I'm taking photos of people fighting or beautiful women, you know, beautiful men. I'm just, you know, at the end of the day, it is, it's a photo. And I'd never have liked when other photographers act as if they're changing the world or that they're the most important thing, or they make the photo shoot about themselves. In reality, it's about the subject, it's about the client and them being happy. And so I would never sit there and go, oh, this is a magazine that I made and these photos are incredible and you have to see them. No one could capture images like me, because that's a lie. A million people can take photos like I do. Not a big deal. But hopefully you dig my photos. I really do. And here's a collection of them and I hope you like them. But I'm not about to pretend that it's like world changing or anything like that, you know? It feels weird to me. Like, friends will introduce me to other friends. Like, oh, you got me, Ryan. He's an incredible photographer. I'm like, I'm okay. You know, not awful. They still call from time to time to hire me. So I must be doing something right. But I can't have an ego about that stuff. Like, I just can't. Because at the end of the day, too, there's a bunch of people who are just starting out that want to be better than me, want to do better than me. And I can never rest and think that I'm good, because then they'll pass me up and I won't get hired ever again.
But like,
so I always have to be my own worst critic.
And I think that's an important message to have, because like, there are people that want what you have, but you're also not going out of your way to like stop them from getting it, right? I mean,
no, I want to help everyone. Like, if anyone has a photo question, can ask me anytime, any question. And I would like, I'll tell them my exact settings. I'll tell them everything I did. Because even with the exact settings, we're not going to take the same photo, so it won't matter. I think a lot of times people get too caught up in the settings and the numbers, and that's what's preventing me from taking a great photo, or I don't have this proper lens, and that's what's holding me back. And really, it's not. It's about seeing it, and having a vision, and having a drawn-out plan of what you're trying to capture. And it's also a feeling. Like, it's just, can't describe it. Like, you can just feel it as you're doing it. And if you sat there too long, or like, oh, that's because he had a 85 millimeter lens and I only had a, you know, 105, like, that'll kill you. And it's wrong. Like, you'll drive yourself nuts.
That's such a healthy way of looking at it. Because I mean, in our industries, and I'm sure you've seen it in wrestling and in MMA as well, you know, there are those people that, you know, have that ego, and that ego is so fragile that they're trying to push people down as opposed to bringing them up and making everything better. Because a competition is awesome. It's fun. Interacting with other people of that same art form is fantastic. Like, so have you ever had to experience something like that? And like, how did you deal with it?
I mean, I'm pretty cool with everyone. I try to be cool with everyone. So I never really run into people that are, one time at a fight, I was at a small show in Miami, And I'd just gotten off the plane because the night before I had shot a UFC. And I was like, I'm going to go to this Miami show because the friend's fighting. So I'll just show up. And like, I knew the people throwing it. So they allowed me to come shoot it just for that fight. And I just remember that I went to the spot because the guy's like, there's no spots wherever you can go. And so I saw an open spot and I sat down. And the person who was shooting next to me, she would get up and move around and walk on the cage. And I'm like, this is like so unprofessional. Like, you're blocking other people. It's not how you do it. And she started yelling at me and screaming at me and like, who do you think you are? This is, I've been shooting this show for blah, blah, blah. And I was just like befuddled and shocked, like someone could be this mean to someone. And then the guy next to me was like, oh, it's your first time shooting here? And I was like, yeah. He goes, oh, do you shoot fights often? I go, well, you know, I just shot the UFC last night. He's like, what? And you're here? I was like, yeah, man, I just love doing this. And like, what's her deal? <You know? laughs> And I was like, I don't ever want to be that person. Like, if you come to a show that I'm the head photographer at, like, cool, feel free. Like, whatever, like, the big wigs at the company have allowed for people to shoot. Like, there's certain things where I'm like, hey, I can't let you backstage. I'm sorry, whatever. But otherwise, I'm like, yo, feel free. Go take some cool stuff. Like, I can't shoot everything. Like, there's so many cool events in the world that are happening right now today. I can't go shoot them all. So why wouldn't I want to see other people do really well?
Like, yeah. Like, I've had experience in the wrestling world, and I'm having experience now in the comedy world. I'm seeing those sort of things happen. And I'm just like, why can't we all just, you know, build each other up and like make this awesome? Like, the more awesome it is for us, the more awesome it is for the audience and everyone else. And like there's too much negativity in the world right now. Like, let's just make everything cool.
I think it just comes along with, you know, or has to do with how you view yourself, having your own self-confidence. And like, if you go and like, I watch, like I said, a ton of documentaries. If you go watch a music documentary, like they would, let's say you watch a Jimi Hendrix documentary, and they'll interview, let's just say, Eddie Van Halen, right? And Eddie Van Halen would then say, oh man, I don't know. The stuff Jimmy could do, I don't know what I'm doing. Like, I'm an idiot on the guitar compared to him, you know? And then on the flip side, you watch another interview where Dave Grohl might be talking about Eddie Van Halen. He's like, I wish I could do what Eddie Van Halen can do. That man is a genius. I stole everything from the guy, blah, blah, blah. And so you realize, like, when you're comfortable where you're at and you're comfortable in your own ability, it allows you to realize, I don't know everything. I'm not good at everything. That person's incredible. That's why I love seeing, like, on my feed, all my photographer friends or videographer friends or artist friends, whoever. Like, man, that's incredible. That's a beautiful photo. I'm extremely jealous that you took it because I wish I took it. But at the same time, so stoked that somebody got that. That's amazing. And so seeing people at WrestleMania, seeing people at huge UFC events, huge boxing events that I couldn't be at or I wasn't hired for, there's, of course, as a human being, you're like, man, I wish I was there. But on the flip side, I'm like, that's gorgeous. That's so cool. I'm so jealous you were there, but I'm so happy that you were there.
So we're going to kind of wind down now. You mentioned baking. You hang out with all these professional athletes who have to keep on these strict diets. Do you ever get caught up in having baking talk and they're like, can you please not right now? I don't need to hear about all the yummy food that you're cooking or making sort of thing.
What's funny is that there's a large amount of fighters who, when they're cutting, especially on fight week, they love watching cooking shows or food shows.
That sounds like torture to me.
Right. You would think so, but they actually love it. They're like, no, I want to think about all the food that I'm going to get to eat once I weigh in. And I was always in shock that they would watch these shows and they loved it. I've been through fight weeks where I'm literally there through everything, like sitting in a sauna with Rashad and Melvin Gillard and Kenny Florian, like literally in the sauna with them. And so you see what they go through. And literally, I just want to be a fly on the wall. The best compliment that anyone could ever give me is if I show them a photo and they go, oh, I didn't even know you took that. Like, to me, that's the most important thing. Like, I am not trying to be intrusive or anything like that. I'm just here to capture some moments for you and hopefully you dig them and hopefully you had no idea I was taking them. Like, I remember one time Lance Palmer, he was over by like maybe half a pound. So he had an hour and he was running through the halls of the arena. And I think we're in Washington, Everett, Washington. And he's covered in like his wrestling, you know, the sweats and the plastics and everything like that. And he's just dripping and dying. And I remember taking photos of that, like come underneath and everything. And I remember one of his guys in his corner in his camp was like waving me off, like, no, man, don't take these photos. And I was just like, trust me, trust me. And then afterwards, he weighs in, everything like that. And I sent him the photos and he was like, I'm so glad you were there. I'm so glad you captured that. And I was, because I knew, like, I knew Lance, I knew, and that's what helps having these relationships. Like, I'm not taking a photo of Lance looking terrible to showcase him looking terrible. I'm taking a photo of that moment so that in the future he can look back and remember that, or remember the struggle, remember the grind, remember what he went through. And, you know, and I, to me, that's the best response I can get, when someone's stoked on something I did and knows that I did it for the right reason, not to capture them at some awful moment to like make fun of them or something like that.
You spend so much time capturing other people's moments, but how do you capture the moments in your life with your family?
I don't. I take photos of my dog. I'll take photos of my wife and stuff like that, but I hate photos of myself.
You mean you're not a selfie guy? I'm so surprised.
No, I hate photos of myself. I hate videos of myself, which is funny because I used to do like a little show on YouTube, but nowadays I'm like, I enjoy not being in front of a camera. I enjoy being behind it. I feel invincible when I have a camera in my hands, you know? Like, I don't like large groups of people. It scares the shit out of me. I hate it. But if you gave me a camera, I could be in an arena full of 100,000 people and have no problem. But take the camera out of my hand and all I want to do is go home. Mm-hmm. I just don't want to be there. But I'm trying to be better. I'm trying to be better for my wife because I know she enjoys having photos of us together. And I realize, you know, the older I get, the more that, you know, time moves so fast. And it is lovely, you know, to be able to look back on the photos and the memories together, which is kind of funny because I would do it for other people, but I don't want to do it for myself. But
it's a weird feeling.
You realize when you get married, you sort of don't answer to yourself anymore. So I have boss. I have a new boss and she's beautiful and she's wonderful and I love her. So
how long you, so I've been married for about 2-3 years now. Jesus. How about yourself?
I've been married 5 years now.
Mm-hmm.
So it's coming up July. Will be our 6th year married together. And it's been fantastic. I never thought I was going to be married. Like I said, the plan was to live out of a backpack and just travel the world and be poor the rest of my life. And instead, I got a wife, a dog, house, and stuff that I never thought I'd have.
Life is good, man. Life is good.
I mean,
and listen, you still get to travel around and take photographs of all these interesting people, places, things. I mean, you're kind of living the dream.
Yeah, you know, I'm living my dream, 100%. You know, everyone has their own idea of what they want, and I am very lucky. Like, I get to wake up to a wonderful human next to me, an absolutely perfect dog. I get to wake up in a beautiful city with no snow. I don't have to have a,
son of a bitch.
auto start car, and I don't have to scrape ice off the windshield. And, you know, I can't imagine doing anything else. Like, I am truly blessed. Like, the most favorite thing in the world to do is take photos, and for some stupid reason people pay me for it, so I couldn't ask for anything better.
So I got two more questions for you. I know NFTs are a huge thing now. I don't understand them, but I know you people have asked you for them. Like, what is this medium, and like I know why you don't want to do them, but like, does it affect your bottom line when you're doing the work that you do, or like,
I mean, it doesn't affect me in any way. I have no desire to do an NFT. If someone does an NFT of a photo I've done for the company does it. I obviously can't control that. So rock on, whatever they want to do. It's not for me. Like, people will sit there and they'll say, well, now I can support an artist. And it's like, well, you could have done that for years by buying one of their prints or buying one of their books or buying one of their zines or anything like that. So I'm not going to attempt to pretend that I'm some crypto NFT genius.
Well, that's like the thing. In the efforts of like people trying to get you to do them, have they explained to you what they are? Because I have no fucking idea.
No, it's just it's generic emails of saying, oh, my buddy's into it. He can get you this. We can start doing this. And it's not for me. Like, I would rather you either have a physical print or nothing, you know? So like, I sell prints on my site that you can buy, and I price them very high because I don't expect anyone to ever buy one, and I don't plan on anyone to ever buy them, but they're there if you want to get them. and it's a one of one. So you'll be the only person to ever own that print, and I want it to be special. Otherwise you can buy, you know, my magazine, and then you can have that as well if you want something. But I have no desire to do anything with NFTs or anything like that. More power to people that do them, but it's just not for me. Like, I like seeing things. I like seeing things up on a wall. You know, I like being able to look at it and really, that to me is the big deal with film and exactly film and everything like that is, you know, printing things out and being able to actually see it and touch it. And it takes a whole new dimension. Same with like the 4x5. Like, I shot CM Punk on 4x5 and the photo looked cool on my phone, but then I printed it, giant print. And it just takes on a whole different dimension.
Yeah.
And I recommend that for any photographer, like, print your work out. It changes everything. It makes a huge, huge difference. And you start to see things that you can't see, you know, just on your phone screen.
And by filming and by shooting on film, you can blow up to any size and it'll be high quality, right?
Well, I mean, the negative, the 4x5 negative is so huge. I mean, you'll absolutely get a high quality, but it also helps that it was a 4-image stitch from my 45 megapixel camera. So the file itself was gigantic. But yes, there's just a certain look, you know, that comes through a medium format or large format camera that just you're blown away when you see it on a print. But I mean, it's the same for digital as well. I print everything. Just print your work so you can really fully, truly understand what you're doing. Because to have all this expensive gear to then show it on a phone, such a waste.
I mean, it's, you've done so much work. Like, I mean, I imagine you probably don't have a favorite piece, but do you have a favorite piece or pieces?
It's hard because I look at photos and I hate them. There's no photo I like that I've ever taken. There's photos that I like hate less, but I just look and realize certain things like, oh, I should have done this too. Every photo I take, I look back and I realize, oh, I should have done this. Like, this is what I screwed up on. Like, there's a photo I took of Joe Schilling smoking a cigarette after his fight in Glory that got a lot of traction and people really dug. And I dug it, the fact that Joe allowed me to capture that moment, because he originally was like, no, don't take the photo. And then he was like, ah, fuck it. It's you, Ryan. You can do it. Go ahead. And that means a lot to me. Again, having that trust. So that one was cool. And then we recreated it with John Moxley.
That print is amazing. The one in Japan with the JD whiskey bottle. I love that print.
Yeah. So he after the Bloodsport match, he mentioned that he's like, oh, I wish I could find a cigarette.
Oh, sorry. That was like Bloodsport? I thought that was a new
Japan. Oh, no. That was a Bloodsport. Yeah.
My apologies.
No, it's all good. And he said, I wish I had a cigarette. And I was like, all right, that's kind of odd. I go, I can find you one. Why do you want a cigarette? And he was like, oh, I want to recreate this Joe Schilling photo I really like. And I was like, I took that. He had no idea that I took it. He's like, of course you took it. I should have known. All right, let's go do it. And again, it was that level of trust that came, because he knew that I took the Joe Schilling photo, that he, you know, trust me to do anything. And so that was really cool to be able to kind of bridge the two worlds of MMA and pro wrestling in a photo that I took, and to know that someone really dug the photo so much that they actually thought about it and wanted to recreate it. Little did he know it was with me, the person who took the original one. And so that's definitely up there. And then a photo of my grandmother that I took, just because, you know, she is, don't know how much longer we have with lovely Grammy. And so, you know, being able to capture that moment and really showcase and show the woman that I know and the woman I see. And really, at the end of the day, that's all I want, is I want to be able to take a photo and show the subject who I see. Like, I want you to see how beautiful I think you are. I want you to see how, you know, what emotion that your face brings to me, as weird as that may sound. But you know what I mean? Like,
yeah, no,
a lot of people are so shy behind the camera, or they're like, oh, I don't look very good. And it's like, no, you don't understand. I think you're beautiful. This is beautiful to me. I hope you appreciate how beautiful you are. And I hope I did you justice.
Yeah, as James Blunt's playing in the background.
Exactly.
now,
constant loop.
Last few questions for you. I know tomorrow is a big day for you because it's the Super Bowl. I know you're a Rams fan.
Yes.
Is the Super Bowl something that you'd want to be a part of as a photographer? Or and do you have any predictions for the game in terms of like a score or anything?
I think that being a photographer there would be so much chaos, and it would be so much just, you need to get the photos out right away. And like, I've shot, you know, college football games, and you don't get to enjoy it. Like, it's really like you're there to work. And for me, a Super Bowl, you know, I've never been to one. I don't really have a desire to go to one because of all the people and everything like that.
Yeah, I agree.
But if I did go, I'd want to fully enjoy it. Or here's a camera, do whatever you want with no expectations of we need the photos in 5 seconds after you take them. So, but again, I'll shoot anything. I love to shoot anything. So if anyone from the Super Bowl is watching and wants to hire me, please feel free. As far as predictions, I mean, I don't want to sound cocky about my team, but 34-0 Rams, 41-0.
See, I think it's going to be
blown. Maybe I'll give Cincinnati 3.
Man, I think it's going to be like when the Seahawks and the Broncos faced off. I think it's just going to be.
God, I hope
so. I think that defense is going to run right through that O-line. And because
I hope so, just for my mental well-being, so that way, like, I can be like, cool, it's halftime, the game's pretty much done, I can relax, because I will be a complete wreck pacing the house. And also, I don't even know if it's that the Rams need to win, because I have seen a Super Bowl victory for the Rams in my lifetime, and that's all I ever wanted. Yeah, all I ever wanted as a kid was to see my Rams win, and so I got to see that. But I just don't. There's so many friends of mine who are Cincinnati fans that I can't let them have joy. Sorry. I can't, including the lovely John Moxley's wife, Renee Paquette, who I adore, and she is absolutely wonderful, but I need her to feel misery that Sunday.
I mean, she just had a kid. I mean, she should be hot on top of the world.
Moved to Cincinnati.
She doesn't need this.
Come on. She just jumped on the Bengal train.
Well, I mean, and I look at, like, the fact that, you know, the guys that were there when they lost to, they lost 2 years ago. Like, they're still there, and they've added Odell, Ramsey, Lavon Miller, Safford. I'm like, my one friend was like, oh, it should be a close game. I'm like, bro, I think they're just going to dog walk him. I think they're just going to be like, gas on the pedal, foot on the pedal, just go right through him, I think.
But. Well, I know my team, so they're very good at breaking my heart. So in reality, I'm not very confident ever.
You need to call McShay and just tell him no challenges.
No, he bad challenges. And also, let's get a little more aggressive when we have a lead. He loves to, like, kind of take the foot off the gas and make some crazy odd play calls that I'm not a fan of. But this is the make or break year. We spent so much money. We don't have any draft picks. Like, this is what we did it for, was for this game. So, like, I'll be terrified if we don't win this
game. Man, it should be my team. Versus the Rams, to be honest, it really should be.
Oh, Bills fan.
Yeah. Oh man, that heartbreak.
51 seconds. 55 seconds.
13
seconds.
Oh,
13.
Man.
Sorry.
13. And we're doing outside coverage, not in zone. It was disappointing. But, you know, young team, future team. One last question for you. I know you're a huge fight fan. I know you participate in fights. You do photos for fights and everything. When you're cage side and you're watching a fight and you're capturing those images, like, can you feel a fight sway left or right to who's going to win? Like, can you feel that energy from the cage?
Yeah. You can definitely. I think there's just something a little different being there in person versus watching it on TV, and also being that close. And there might be like just a brutal low kick where you're like, oh, that one hurt.
And you hear it like so close, right?
Yeah. It's a different sound or something. And you're like, that one stung them. That could be a game changer. And definitely, you can feel it. There's a feeling in the crowd. There's a feeling in the air. You can really tell when, like, all of a sudden the fight has shifted. I think it's difficult in MMA just because of the way it's set up versus boxing, which, you know, is a longer 12 rounds. You know, you can really tell a story. I think it's difficult to really, you know, tell a full story in an MMA fight just because the way, you know, the 3 rounds, 5 minutes, takedowns, and things like that can negate, you know, a story that is unfolding. So that's why I really enjoy shooting boxing and watching boxing. But no, you can definitely tell when you're there.
Yeah. I think watching the UFC when there was no fans was one of the most fun things to do, because you got to hear all that contact. And, like, you don't hear when there's a crowd, but, like, my God, you hear the crack of that kick or that punch connecting. You're like, oh my God, how is he not dead?
No, it's a totally different
he or she, sorry.
Yeah, it's a totally different sound and experience when you're there, and you can just hear the difference, the way, like, a kick lands or the way a punch lands, when it lands flush and it's changing the outcome of the fight versus, you know, just a glancing blow. It's especially like a body kick. Oh my God. Yeah.
Ryan, and speaking of experience, this has been a great experience for me. I'm such a huge fan of your work. I wish you nothing but the best and continued success. And I will cheer for your Rams this Sunday. So you got one more on the bandwagon for you.
Thank you. We need all the help we can get. We're a tiny multi-billion dollar team.
Appreciate it. Thank you so much, brother.
Thanks, brother.
Well, congratulations to Ryan Loco and his Los Angeles Rams. They won the Super Bowl. I had to ask about that as we recorded that on Saturday, the day before the Super Bowl. And lo and behold, they won it. I mean, a little bit controversial with that holding within 5 yards of the goal line sort of thing. But I'll be damned. They won it. And they got Odell Beckham, Aaron Donald, Le'Veon Miller, Matt Stafford, Jalen Ramsey, Sean McVay. They all got Super Bowl rings now, and the future is very bright for that team, and Wentworth too as well. He deserved it a long, long time ago. If you are interested in checking out any of Ryan's work, he has a website called www.ryanloco.com. Twitter, Instagram, Ryan Loco. You can check out Orange Crush magazine. It's a wrestling-based magazine. He does a lot of work for them. It's a very selective magazine. I think they only got 4 released copies. If you see some of the content that's involved with that magazine, and you're a big wrestling fan like myself, it's worth the price of admission alone. Anyways, that's it for me this week, guys. I hope you guys had a good time with this episode with Brian. I know I did. It was a huge honor to have him on the podcast, and I look forward to having more guests in the future. So until then, and down the line, I'll see you guys later. I'll see you guys later. Cheers.